Welcome to another edition of the Curses and Champions podcast, an exclusive podcast of the Chicago Sports Column. Alongside Darren Zaitlin, Ryan Wooden, I'm Matt Gentile, and we're talking some White Sox today because, hey, it's been
Kopech Day.
Kopech Week, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's going to be Kopech Month.
Really, I mean.
They certainly hope it is. So they had like 9,500 walk-ups.
Yeah.
To the actual game, which I think on average it's been somewhere around like 2,000 or 3,000 walk-ups. So if they can obviously keep that sort of fervor going, even just from a marketing standpoint, the White Sox would be thrilled.
So I was kind of upset that I was actually at the White Sox game on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I was actually a little ticked because I wanted to catch the Hawk Canerco broadcast.
Yeah.
Okay, this could be wildly entertaining. But when I was there, I saw the tweet from the White Sox that Kopech was coming up, and I'm like, holy crap. And when they made the announcement in the stadium, like, the place just went, it was up for grabs.
All
50 people were just going crazy.
It was more like 83.
At least 57.
So, I mean, Ryan, you are the resident White Sox fan.
Literally lives here.
You know, just take the mic and go. Michael Kopech.
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, obviously, I think it starts with the call-up. Inevitably, it's one of those things where the White Sox have held the line that service time wasn't going to be the distinguishing factor. Clearly, it's a factor, because I think you could have made a very, very easy case that he was one of their five best pitchers coming out of spring training. So if service time was no factor, he probably would have been called up to begin the year. He'd have been in the rotation. It was obviously enough of a factor for them to hold him back, have him work on a few things, which primarily working on developing a more sound command of the changeup, which was, you know, definitely bullet point number one for him as stuff to work on when you're down in Charlotte.
91 miles an hour, right?
Yeah, 91 coming off 98, but with the tail and the movement. I don't know if you guys saw the gif of Robbie Grossman swinging over the top of the 191 mile an hour changeup he threw and the path. I mean, just absolutely nasty.
Trash.
So that certainly came along fairly well for him down in AAA. And then number two was he's always had a curveball, but they made him wait until like his 11th or 12th start or something like that down in Charlotte before he started throwing it consistently. And during his actual opening start with the White Sox, as abbreviated as it was, he was actually leaning more on the curveball than he was the slider. So they got what they wanted out of it. And he hit a midseason stretch where it kind of made him look smart for having done so. Control fell apart, and then I believe since like July 1st or 13th or something like that, he'd gone 44 innings and struck out 59 and walked four people.
Mm-hmm.
And that obviously kind of facilitated like, okay, he's ready.
Yeah.
Let's do this. So,
you know, and I get the concern anytime you bring up a guy, there's always that concern about starting the clock too soon. I think there was a difference with pitchers though.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about, you know, especially a pitcher like Kopech, those are the type of guys that you might be able to lock in a little earlier. You know, the White Sox did it with Chris Sale.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, 5 years ago.
Quintana, a similar idea. They still had plenty of arbitration period time left and were able to lock Sale and Quintana into team-friendly deals. So they definitely weren't nearly as concerned about the service time aspect. Now, I think one of the benefits of waiting until, you know, the second to last week of August to do something like this is if something goes wrong, something, you know, breaks down next year, if he goes like say the Lucas Giolito route, they could theoretically still send him back because they'll still have options left on his contract, send him back, halt the service time, and still ultimately get a full 4 years out of it. If it comes to bear that that's not the case, that's probably a good thing. It means he's pitching pretty well for you, and that's not going to be a huge problem that, you know, the 4 years of service time is going to come up a little bit early and you're going to have to start thinking about arbitration and things of that nature, because the sooner you get towards at least that first arbitration period, the sooner you might get to, like you said, doing a team-friendly contract extension.
So what was that feeling like, though, seeing him come in into that game, and there was the, you know, rain delay, and so it abbreviated his start, but how did it feel to actually get to finally see it live?
I feel like every other White Sox fan out there, and I'm not normally like that. Normally, I'm the more pessimistic guy, but I haven't been that amped for a late August White Sox game that didn't have any sort of playoff, you know, parables to it whatsoever. I was absolutely juiced for that start to come around, and every single pitch had that sort of energy to it.
Like Jose Canseco juiced?
Yeah.
More juice than Canseco.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was amazing how it not only juiced up White Sox fans, you know, you said it with the attendance, you know, it sounds like the ratings were pretty good for that game.
Yeah.
But seemed like a really big story in Chicago too.
Yeah.
Like, this was must-see TV for anybody that's a baseball fan, even Cubs fans, I think, were tuning in. I know I was in and out.
Whenever there's a big call-up on either team, usually every, you know, Chicago sports fan will tune in.
This is the best part, I think, in the midst of a rebuild. This is some sage advice and wisdom from two guys that lived this on the, you know, north side. This is some of the most fun you'll have, is starting to see these guys bear fruit.
Especially in a losing season.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the, more like the Rizzo call-up, because this is like the first big, like Moncada kind of reminds me of Starlin Castro.
Yeah.
In the call-up. Or maybe Tim Anderson does.
Hopefully there winds up being a little bit more value overall. Yes. Don't get me wrong, Starlin Castro is still a solid baseball player, but they're hoping Yohan Moncada is still a star. But with Kopech, his stuff is so electric that they just, I think White Sox fans know that even with all the other talent that they have coming up in the system, that there's something particularly special about him in terms of the overall talent. Now, there are still roadblocks. I mean, he's still going to have to, you know, display a little bit more control than he has throughout the course of his minor league career. He's going to have to pitch a little bit more efficiently. That's one thing that we saw in the abbreviated first start, 52 pitches over the course of two innings. That's why he ultimately didn't come back out after the 52-minute rain delay, and then the White Sox, of course, still had to bat. If he'd have been sitting at 32, 35 pitches, they'd probably give more serious consideration. But the Twins came in with a game plan to definitely pester him and make him throw as many pitches as possible. They fouled off, I think, a ridiculous number of pitches in that game, and forced him to work a little bit, but pitching over the top of the trouble that he got himself in. There was nothing barreled. Three hits were all very softly hit singles. Man, the stuff, just incredible. The spinner. So the big thing is the fastball. Everyone is going to be excited and juiced about, like, you know, the 96 to 98 with the possibility.
A lot of juicing going on here.
Oh, so much juice.
So much juice.
So much juice. I'm actually wringing my wrist is getting a little bit sore because I'm sitting here just grinding on this orange until all the juice has come out. Wait, were you thinking about something? Oh,
yeah. Okay. I mean, all right, put that thing away.
But people do. They get really excited about the idea of 96 to 98, where he can reach back and grab a 101 when he wants it. But what's genuinely more important to that is the spin rate, which is the best in baseball of starting pitchers. Obviously, small sample size, but his spin rate was up near 2,700 RPMs. And what that means is it's ultimately allowing a fastball to ride and making the hitter have a really, really hard time of discerning what the overall drop rate's going to be on it. People are expecting to see a fastball, even at 96, 98, and expecting it to end up at a certain level in terms of overall height. But with a higher spin rate, you can ultimately deceive them and get them to drop their barrel, say, an inch, inch and a half below where the ball is ultimately going to wind up, and that's how you generate swings and misses. And elite spin rates like that are really what separates a good fastball from a great fastball.
So part of me wished that Hawk was on the call so he could talk about spin rate. I think that would have been great.
Well, yeah. And actually, what's even more amazing about that is his spin rate is higher than Justin Verlander,
who is the highest spin rate starter in baseball. Yeah.
No, that's pretty crazy considering, like, also Justin Verlander, how much he's improved since he went to Houston.
You think about it, anyway, when you talk about somebody like Verlander, that's a good point because you're talking about that type of echelon of pitchers.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a once in a generational pitcher. And that kind of, I think, segues us into another point.
Yeah.
What's, in your opinion, what should the ceiling be? Like, you traded Chris Sale, and you got a haul that included Kopech.
Yeah.
So you're hoping that he could either equal Sale's production or exceed it.
Yeah.
What's the ceiling for you?
Obviously, there's other parts to that trade as well. Their goal, of course, and his goal is absolutely to be that sort of dominant, just top-of-the-line number one starter. If he were, like, a good number two starter, they could get away with that so long as they do get eventual all-star production out of Yohan Moncada. You know, Luis Alexander Basabe potentially gives them something somewhere down the line. Mm-hmm. They can still make that trade a success even if he is not, you know, the Cy Young contender. But I think we can all agree that you look specifically at the talent, and the Cy Young is nowhere near out of the question for him at some point in his career. He should be in that conversation if things break right for him. Now, of course, the reality of a power right-handed arm in particular like that, who is a bigger guy but not a huge guy who necessarily carries that much violence easily on his body, as the arm can break down. The control, like we said, has been a problem for him in the past, which means that there's a possibility it can continue to be a problem for him. So there are going to be some hurdles along the way to him reaching that potential, but he absolutely has that potential.
I was going to say, do you think with his stuff that down the road he has the potential to maybe tie that record, the 20 strikeouts in a game?
He has the stuff for it. There are so many things that have to converge for something to happen like that. With everyone who's done it before, it's been a matter of, you know, four or five of those swinging strikes are ultimately going to be about luck somewhere along the way. The difference between, you know, being able to go nine innings and strike 20 out versus going seven innings and striking out 15 is somewhat razor thin and requires a few other circumstances to break your way. Because, you rack up a lot of pitches when you strike people out.
Yeah, I was going to say, a guy like, you know, Kopech, he's one of those pitchers that you figure he's going to rack up his pitch count. Mm-hmm. And in today's game, I don't know if any manager is going to let a guy like that go the distance.
He's going to have to get somewhere in his career where he is very, very firmly cemented and proven that he can go 115, 120, and 125 pitches without discomfort before you start to say, okay, I mean, he can go nine if he has great stuff today and he's at a point where, you know, seven innings in, he's 14, 15 strikeouts deep. You might say, okay, well, we'll let him throw 130 pitches today and see if he can get to 20, but that's just such a rare thing to see, obviously, these days.
Right, I was going to say, like, you know, did Max Scherzer get there or almost got
Scherzer
there?
Got it yeah. last year.
Yeah, he did.
The thing that Scherzer does not rack up a high pitch count usually.
He attacks the strike zone.
He's crazy efficient with the way he goes after hitters, and he's one of the rare power pitchers that we've seen, especially in this day and age, who, like you said, can go after guys without burning pitches to try to strike someone out by nibbling at the edge on 0-2 pitches.
I learned this last year in the playoffs because we saw it 100,000 times. He has two different color eyes.
Yeah, oh my God. I love how that, like, has become...
He's a husky. Sort of
like, and he kind of does look like a husky. I never looked at it like
he's a man dog.
I'll tell you what, he's a bulldog.
Let me tell you.
So,
I love this guy.
I'll tell you something. You know who he reminds me a lot? Reminds me of Blackjack McDowell. All right, anyway, you know, I gotta ask, as a White Sox fan, have you learned more about the 67 Red Sox than any other actual current team?
Yes, I genuinely have. And listening to, there was a Hawk broadcast earlier in the year where Carl Yastrzemski called in.
Oh my God, that was so great.
And they didn't even, the thing is, they didn't even talk about the 67 Red Sox. It was literally just Carl Yastrzemski saying, "Hawk, I love you," and Hawk going, "Carl, yes, I love you too, dog.
I love you too." All right, so you've been golfing lately? Like,
it was legitimately, like, they hadn't talked in, like, 2 weeks, and they were just calling for 2.5 minutes real quick to catch up with one another. It was like old hens cackling at each other.
That's exactly what it was. To get back to Kopech, though, I actually want to do a fun game. It's the game everybody loves. The poor man's or even the rich man's comp.
Yeah.
Okay?
Let's do it.
I'm going to throw out...
middle class.
No. Okay. No, that doesn't exist.
We're in a day and age where the middle class is evaporating, so only poor and rich people.
We
Darren.
Do political takes here on the Chicago Sports College.
Fake news.
I don't know who you're referring to when you do that. We're like ESPN. You remain neutral until it's convenient. I'm going to throw out some names.
Okay.
And because you brought up the potential injury factor that could come into play.
And that's something no one will ever have.
So I'm going to throw this name out. It's a contemporary right
mm-hmm.
now. Noah Syndergaard. Because Noah Syndergaard, very talented, guy that if he is playing a full season or at full strength, probably is one of the most dominant pitchers mm-hmm. in baseball.
Yeah. Yeah.
The injury concern has been a problem the last couple of seasons.
Yes, yeah.
If he becomes that kind of guy, though, where you might get some DL stints throughout the year, maybe starts 25 games,
mm-hmm.
are you cool with that?
Yeah, you ultimately still take that. Now, I will say this, and this is, you know, again, really, really meant to be me just kind of, like, raving about the how good Michael Kopech's stuff is, especially from an analytics standpoint.
Yes, Hawk. Oh, wait, analytics, forgive me.
Yeah, no, not Hawk.
Yeah, not Hawk. Mr. Benetti.
His stuff is honestly significantly better than Noah Syndergaard's is. But his control is significantly worse and always has been. Noah Syndergaard, throughout even his minor league career, has kept his walk rate down around 5%. Michael's been flirting with 10 almost every year of his professional career. He's been able to drop that down, obviously, of late. If he can find the level of command that Noah's had over the course of his career, it's not even a question of who is ultimately going to be the guy who gets more punch outs and works, you know, ultimately more dominantly. Because he is, Noah Syndergaard, his 97 to 98 mile an hour fastball sits at like league average in terms of overall spin rate. He doesn't generate nearly as much overall vertical or horizontal movement on his breaking ball. And I don't think the changeup is anywhere near as dominant when it's on point as Michael Kopech.
So what you're saying is he could exceed Noah's arc.
Hey!
I'll be here all
the time. Yeah, that's my rich man's comp. I think he can be the rich man's Noah Syndergaard.
Okay.
And obviously if he's healthy and you get Noah Syndergaard level production over the course of 33, 34 starts a year, now you again are starting to talk about a player who is very clearly in that front runner for the Cy Young Award type of status.
Okay. This is the comp, and I actually have brought it up before we jumped on here. And I'm not going to take credit for it. I actually heard it from David Kaplan on ESPN 1000. I know. It's like the... He draws groans. I've come to respect him in his place in Chicago sports media, but he does elicit a lot of groans.
He has to deal with David DeJesus,
though. Yeah, that's true. He should be canonized.
That man is a saint.
David DeJesus is literally
spin doctor. He's just the swing doctor.
Doug Glanville, save us.
Yeah, David DeJesus is just a block of melting ice on television. That's all he is.
With a very attractive wife.
Yep.
And then David Kaplan can sit there and just spit hot takes and facilitate the melting even more so from DeJesus.
The David Kaplan School of Journalism. What's your take on this guy's swing? No, but he brought up this the other day, and it got me thinking.
Mm-hmm.
If, and this is the poor man's comp.
Okay.
This is probably, worst case scenario. If the worst case scenario was Kerry Wood, how pissed would you be?
Not that pissed, but here's the thing. It's all about the timing, honestly, of the rest of the roster at that point. Because if you take Kerry Wood and it's not 1998, although obviously they made the playoffs, the postseason in 98. But if they had built a roster in Chicago for the Cubs at that point that was in a position to...
Gary Gaetti? Come on.
To truly, truly, like, open a window...
Jeff Bowser?
To compete for multiple championships, and you get Kerry Wood level production for three, four years that he had to begin his career there, potentially you can stomach that. Now, I think we also all know that the White Sox aren't there.
They have superstar Fred McGriff coming in. Ron Beck.
Rest in peace.
I'm sorry.
Awesome. Pour one out for Ron Beck. That mustache, though.
I gotta say, the... greatest stories I ever heard, not to go on a side tangent with the Cubs, was that your stories about Jeff Plowser, Gary Gaetti, and Mark Grace all smoking cigarettes in the locker room at the clubhouse.
It's the last bastion of baseball that Hawk Harrelson approved of.
Yes, this is Hawk right Harrelson there. Approved. It's interesting, though. Like, if you saw like those type of injuries that Kerry Wood had, or like mm-hmm. those struggles that Kerry Wood had, I could see in today's day and age, they would look at Michael Kopech and say, your greatest strength might be a bullpen arm, might be a closer.
I mean, if you put him in a high leverage situation where he knows he's going to have to throw 30 pitches maximum, and he can reach back for the 105 in his pocket, of course.
He'd be the most dominant closer in the game at that point.
Now, the problem is, as much as I love like a truly dominant power pitching closer, obviously the value in comparison to they absolutely have to exhaust every possible avenue with him as a starter before they make that sort of determination, because if he goes wrong, especially with the way that they've developed this farm system and just stashed it full of power arms, it doesn't speak particularly well to the way that he's obviously been developed, which leads you to believe that there could be other people, quite a few of the other pitchers that they have in their system, that could run into similar issues. Getting him wrong, getting Yoan Moncada wrong to a lesser extent, getting Eloy Jimenez wrong. Two out of the three go bad for them, and the rebuild's gonna have a real hell of a time
mm-hmm.
ultimately working out. They need two of three, if not three of three, to eventually reach, at least fringe all-star potential,
mm-hmm.
and then for other pieces obviously to fall in line for this to work out for them.
Yeah, so. I had some other names, but given the conversation we've had about Kopech, I think any average pitcher would probably be disappointing at this point.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
if I said he's going to be Jose Quintana in terms of that kind of career, I think that given the expectation level right now, that might
the struggle would be that his the power stuff obviously isn't reflected in a pitcher like that. You're just not going to see guys who have the ability to, over the course of a year, strike out, say, 12 or 13 people per nine, mm-hmm. the way that Kopech has. And so because when you have that level of stuff, anything that kind of puts you in the range where you're like a 3.8 or higher ERA guy over the course of the year is struggling. Now, in a given year, that can happen. That's fine. We all know baseball is a game where the numbers, especially the basic numbers like ERA, aren't necessarily indicative of how good somebody is. You can get unlucky for a year and have a 4.2 ERA. But over the course of a career, if he's that sort of a guy, that's probably saying that something went wrong somewhere along there, because you shouldn't be able to miss that many bats mm-hmm. and have that many problems unless you're just walking everybody under the sun. Tyler Chatwood.
That will be available in the Cubs podcast. So I think this is actually a good transition to then the next guy, because today mm-hmm. in the Players Tribune, we had a piece come out about Ivo Jimenez, or, you know, a self-written piece. It was titled "I'm Ready."
Did you read it in Spanish or did you read it in English?
I read it in French.
I read it in Spanish, of course, because as a core Mexican, I'm fluent in... No, I'm not. I'm not at all. I really, really wish that I was. My grandmother actually forgot how to speak Spanish when she was like 14 years old and got a D in high school Spanish when she was 16, despite the fact that she is from Mexico and everything.
We pour our hearts out here on Curses and Champions podcast, an exclusive podcast of the Chicago Sports Column. So you read it
yes
in English?
I did in English. I mean, I tried Spanish, but I really wasn't picking up almost any of the words that were written there. So
okay. So he clearly thinks he's ready, wink wink, if mm-hmm. this isn't something contrived by the White Sox, his agents. I mean,
I want to be clear with you. This is contrived by the White Sox and his agents. We saw it with Michael Kopech.
Is this Kenny Williams or
Come
Rick
on. Cohen?
I mean, this has Kenny's fingerprints all over it, right?
You know what you should do is write for the Players Tribune.
And pretend like you don't know.
Yeah, pretend you don't know.
But now you know.
Hey, Ken Griffey Jr., you want to come out of retirement? Play this September?
But, I mean, it's absolutely a part of what I assume to be a media blitz that will end in him being called up probably on September 1st, because that's when it makes the most sense. They don't have to option anybody, deal with any of the other roster stuff that comes with it. Michael Kopech, when he was called up, they ultimately started the media blitz where they started to throw him 670 The Score, ESPN 1000, had him doing interviews with people, and then an E60 piece aired on Sunday. And then, of course, like you said, Sunday night, you're at the game. That's when they announce it, build towards this Tuesday. So they've now proven with these mega prospects like this that they're going to give it about a week of runtime where they start to build into it. And I think ultimately, you're going to get Jimenez being called up on September 1st. So
does that, as a White Sox fan, because again, we talk about service time, does mm-hmm. that concern you a little bit that they're going to roll the dice, or would you... If it were you, if you were Rick Hahn or Kenny Williams, would you be saying, hey, wait until next April?
Yeah, I think we're far enough into our podcast careers together for you to know that I am always the person who prefers like going by the numbers, which means I would wait until after, you know, the middle of April next year. I'd have done it with both Kopech and Jimenez. Now, I'm not going to get super bent out of shape about the fact that they started a little bit early with him. It's not going to be the most upsetting thing in the world because, like you mentioned with Chris Sale and Jose Quintana, they have a history also with Tim Anderson, being able to get a relatively team-friendly deal done early on in his career to try to make it, because that's the big thing with the White Sox. Even if everything goes perfectly in this rebuild, they're never going to be like a luxury tax type team because of their obvious, you know, restraints in terms of the TV ratings they're going to deal with, the attendance that they're going to draw.
And Jerry Reinsdorf.
Well, yeah. Although, I mean, when they were good, you know, coming off the 2005 World Series, in 2006, they led the American League in attendance and had almost 3 million people come to the ballpark. So they'll show up if they're good. But still, it's not going to be a team that you see approaching $200, $250 million in payroll. So they know they have to get these young guys locked into deals early. Otherwise, they're going to lose him at year 7. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, I mean, it's not the biggest deal in the world that he's going to be called up early. I would wait, though, personally.
I'm with you. Like, I'm of that mindset. Like, if you can get that extra year of service mm-hmm. time, you do it. I mean, with Chris Bryant, I remember that being an actual debate. And it took up so much time on sports radio shows. You would go on Twitter, there'd mm-hmm. be back and forth. And, you know, I get it. If you're ready, you're ready. But there are loopholes in the system right mm-hmm. now that allow you to get away with something like this. And if you're a team from a long-term perspective, that's what you got to think of if you're a general manager. That's why I think you have to make that move. But I kind of do see it from that other perspective, yeah. though, that you brought up with Rick Hanna.
Now, the thing is, with you bringing up Chris Bryant, actually, it kind of segues perfectly into this conversation, because I do think there actually are teams who are slightly fearful of the idea that, you know, Chris Bryant obviously had a challenge to try to say that they had held him back for too long and try to escalate that service time forward. If anyone were to win that between now and, say, Eloy hitting that fourth year of service time, to win the argument saying, hey, the team actively held me back, I should be given arbitration a year earlier, the White Sox are definitely the type of organization that can try to look that far ahead and be like, well, what if someone wins one of these cases and then we have to deal with it mm-hmm. in the interim between the next 3 years while Eloy's with us, where we're going to hit arbitration a year earlier. Right. So they might have thought about it from that standpoint and just thought like, well, let's just take our lumps and he's ready. Let's go.
Before we wrap up, I just want to get your quick thoughts on Yoan Moncada. Mm-hmm. You know, lots being made about his struggles right now. Do you have any long-term concern? I've seen some things yeah. on Twitter where people are already jumping ship. I'm in that more, you know, be patient category.
Yeah.
Again, Cubs comparison. Saw it with Javi Baez.
Yeah, I think that's an appropriate comparison for sure. Javi ultimately took, you know, 1,000, 1,200, 1,300, 1,400 plate appearances before he became what we're seeing today. And Yoan's, you know, 700 plate appearances into his career at this point. I don't like making any sort of like sweeping judgments on a player until they, especially position players, because hitting is so, so hard. The entire game is hard, but hitting, especially with the number of power pitchers that there are stacked in the game right now, is just remarkably difficult. And so I'd love to see him ultimately get to 1,500 plate appearances before we start making truly sweeping judgments on him, which would put like towards the end of next year. Mm-hmm. If those problems persist to the end of next year, you probably have to start making some difficult decisions. But at the moment, I think that you can kind of be patient with him and allow him to kind of work his way into things.
Well, I think the next 6 weeks of the season are going to be a lot of fun. You're going to see, mm-hmm. you know, what Kopech's got here down yeah. the stretch. Maybe you're going to see a little bit more from Yoan Moncada. Maybe it gets them juiced, as you were saying.
Is Carson Fulmer dead?
I think so.
He's in the bullpen yes. now. They finally did that.
Oh.
But unfortunately, he's still walking everybody under the sun. So
you got a couple other things. He's like Tyler Chatwood. It's actually, he is. I was going to say, this Lucas Giolito is interesting.
Yeah, if he's pitching better of late. If he could get his ERA, say, under 5, that'd be it's a salvage of a season if he pitches well down the stretch.
You know, the other things, too, you got Carlos, you know, Rodon mm-hmm. pitching very well
yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that are going to be fun to watch. And of course, they bring up Eloy Jimenez. It's going to be very entertaining.
Yeah, there's going to be stuff of interest. Obviously, the baseball is not going to be good. There's 30 games under 500. But you're going to have some things where you're hoping to see, you know, some bullpen issues come together. They called up Ryan Burr today. They're probably going to wind up calling up a guy named Ian Hamilton over the course.
Hamilton Burr.
Yeah, we got the Hamilton connection.
Keep
there.
Keep them away from each other.
Yeah, we're going to have mm-hmm. a duel in the dugout.
Yeah, and they throw hard, so they could probably hurt each other.
That's so pistols at dawn. All right. Well, for the latest White Sox stuff, visit the Chicago Sports Column at www.chicagosportscolumn.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Shy Sports Column, or like us on Facebook. Because, you know, we love to be liked.
Yeah, it's very important.
It is. You'll find all in-depth analysis and reaction, as well as more episodes of the Curses and Champions podcast. And speaking of the podcast, all episodes are available to stream or download on Spotify and Google Play.
Let's get it.
All right.
We're there.
We're in the 21st century, baby.
Yeah, buddy.
Alongside Darren Zaitlin, Ryan Wooden, I'm Matt Gentile. Thank you for listening.
You can also download on Napster.